All right. Last in our section on the Texas state agencies, we have the Texas General Land Office represented by Robert Hatter. He's Deputy Director for Energy Resources. Robert, when you are ready.
Excuse me, I got a bad wheel. Actually, it's been a bad wheel for a long time, but. Yeah. As you said, I'm Robert Hatter, Deputy Director of Energy Resources at the General Land Office. Sorry. And then actually, Lori had said that when they call the Railroad Commission to ask about minerals, typically the Railroad Commission employees will send them over to me, over at the General Land Office, and then I'll explain to them exactly what Lori said, that, you know, we don't have any jurisdiction.
This one?
Okay. All right, thank you. The topic here is what, in fact, it's on our website, I stole it off there, is turning oil into textbooks for Texas children. My boss is George P. Bush. He's Jeb Bush's son. Probably a lot of y'all already knew that, but and he's really made a push lately to try to get more revenues to come in with the drop in oil prices. The Energy Resources Division. You know, a lot of people don't know much about the General Land Office. It's not a large agency, and it's not one that most people know about. But the Energy Resources Division, which is just one division of the General Land Office, does the normal things you might think. We issue oil and gas leases. We issue actually hard mineral leases as well. We issue geophysical permits, prospect permits. We actually physically monitor drilling, production, and field practices. I also have an audit staff that does royalty audits and limited reviews. And I also have a department called the State Energy Marketing Program, which actually markets natural gas and electricity to public retail customers, like an ISD, like a school or a prison or a park or a county or a city. Currently, we have one-third of the public retail market, about 450 customers, so both power and natural gas. The GLO, here again, people don't know a lot about it. It was established in 1836 as one of the first acts of the Republic of Texas. In fact, the commissioner's job, the land commissioner's job, actually predates the governor's office by 9 years. He serves a four-year term. He's elected statewide. And when the GLO was originally formed to manage the public domain, to provide maps and surveys and issue title. And then, of course, in 1845, Texas became a state. But unlike other western states, the state of Texas did not relinquish its public lands. They were kept. There's arguments about why that happened. I think probably the truth is that the federal government saw that land as mainly desert and didn't think it was worth anything, and so they weren't willing to pay for it. So luckily we still have it, because a lot of that is prime oil and gas territory. As well as parts of West Texas and South Texas, the Permanent School Fund, which is where all of our money from oil and gas, most all of our money from oil and gas is deposited in the Permanent School Fund. Permits, and I'll tell you a little more about that in a minute. We also do leasing for the highways, the prison system, the park system, Texas Parks and Wildlife, and pretty much every other state agency with the exception of the University of Texas, which has its own board for lease. However, Commissioner Bush is the chairman of that board for lease, and so he's a voting member of the board for lease for university lands. We also own, out in the Gulf of Mexico, about 10.36 miles, what they call three marine leagues. That's unlike any other state except the Gulf side of Florida. So we actually, most states own just 3 miles out, and so we own out to three marine leagues, which is, like I say, just over 10 miles. And then in 1876, the Constitution of 1876 set aside half of the public domain for the use and benefit of the Permanent School Fund. The PSF, as we call it, helps finance public education, kindergarten through 12th grade. And so that money, as opposed to the Permanent University Fund, which goes to University of Texas and Texas A&M, Permanent School Fund goes to public and primary education. Since the inception of the Permanent School Fund, actually, we're updating numbers. Our fiscal year runs from September 1st to August 31st, so I just now got some new numbers. We've actually deposited over $18 billion in the Permanent School Fund historically, and most of that, almost all of it, is oil and gas royalties, rentals, and bonus. Historically, the GLO reserved all minerals and state lands sold until 1866. In 1866, the state decided to relinquish the minerals, and so they had a general mineral release, and the text is there. And then in 1895, there were rumblings of, you had spent until top not much later, but you had rumblings of maybe oil and gas activity in Texas and also some hard mineral potential. So in 1895, the GLO started reserving their minerals again. And the timing on how they were sold determines on our type of ownership, which I'll show you a little more here. And then in May of 1914, we received our first check for an oil and gas lease. It's in the Goose Creek Field, which is north of Galveston in Harris County near Houston. And actually, that lease is still producing. So it's generated millions of dollars for us. The PSF now has over 13.5 million mineral acres scattered across the state, but primarily situated in West Texas and South Texas, which is fortunate for us. That makes us the Permanent School Fund, for which the GLO works, is the largest mineral owner in the state of Texas. As far as where the lands are, the largest concentrations are going to be in the southwest part of the Eagle Ford down in Webb County near Laredo, and then north in Dimmitt and LaSalle counties. But the GLO also, or the Permanent School Fund, rather, also owns all of the large major rivers that run through the Eagle Ford. So we've got all those leased up, and we're pooled into units for the drilling of wells in the Eagle Ford. And we own quite a bit of acreage down in Webb County, where we own the minerals. We sold the surface, but we still have the minerals. Most of that's leased to BP and Lewis, and they're actively drilling it. They're primarily dry gas wells, but they make 6 to 8 million cubic feet a day, so they're still fairly decent wells. And then I went to the world's most revered source for oil and gas data, and that would be the Encyclopedia Britannica. It was a simple math, so I thought, it looks good. The Delaware, we're fortunate, the Delaware Basin is where most of our minerals are. In West Texas, including areas west over the Diablo Platform, there's about 4 million mineral acres owned by the Permanent School Fund. Most of our acreage is in the northern Delaware within Texas, in the counties of Reeves and Culberson. We probably own about a third of the minerals there. As far as revenue, fiscal year 2014, we deposited $622 million into the Permanent School Fund. That's solely from oil and gas activity. 2015, it went down a little bit, about $587 million. And then this year, I actually have the number now, it's $521 million. That's a drop of about 10%, but from our fiscal year 15 to 16, oil dropped by 32% and natural gas dropped on average by 39%. So you're not seeing the drop in oil prices reflected as much because of the additional activity out in the Delaware Basin. And in the Delaware Basin, they're primarily drilling Upper Wolf Camp, but a lot of Bone Spring wells, but they seem to be concentrating in the Upper Wolf Camp. But the entire Wolf Camp is productive in most of the areas. We had a lease sale. In fact, four lease sales ago, we were doing everything pretty much the way we did in the 1950s. And I'll show you some of the sale results. In July 2016, we had a lease sale. We used EnergyNet.com, and so it was all online sale, and we pulled in $98 million for that sale. That's the second largest sale in the history of the GLO. The first largest sale was in April of 2011 when the whole place started firing up out there. Some leases we let for as much as 15,000 an acre, which is very high for that area. And this, I'm not real good at doing graphs and stuff, so it's a little primitive, but this is revenues just from the lease sales. We have a little different types. We have some types of land where we negotiate the leases, but for those what we call state fee tracts, you can see the January 15th sale was the last one we did basically on a manual basis. And you see we received $2.3 million. The August 15th was the first time we used EnergyNet, so we got over 20 million there. Kind of started running out of acreage a little bit, and so in January 16 we also used EnergyNet, but still made almost about $11 million. And then you see the large sale we just had of $98.3 million in July of 2016. I think a more revealing fact is the bottom one. At the manual sale, we got an average of $227 per acre. The first internet sale on energynet.com was $1,712, then up to $2,492, and then the average for all acreage leased across the state at the July 16 lease sale was almost $7,400 per acre. So it really has been a good thing for us and generated a lot of money. As far as the money received, just you can get kind of an idea. In 2016, oil royalties were $199 million. Natural gas royalties were $115 million. Bonus, which is the amount they pay up front for just acquiring the lease, was $175 million. So we actually made more in bonus than we made in natural gas royalties. And delay rentals were about $28 million. I know there's been a lot of stories. I'm sure most of you all heard of the Alpine High. It's an Apache discovery. Unlike the northern part of the Delaware, it's not Wolf Camp and Bone Spring. It's a Barnett and Woodford shale play. I know this map's a little crude, but if it has color on it, then the Permit School Fund owns the minerals. And so the different colors, the yellow is what's known as Relinquishment Act. That's land sold between 1895 and 1931. They were classified as mineral lands. It's a little peculiar due to a lawsuit in 1928 called Green v. Robeson. The Supreme Court determined that the Permanent School Fund owned 100% of the minerals, but all revenue is to be split equally between the surface owner and the Permanent School Fund. So they kind of split the baby. So most of what we own out there is going to be Relinquishment Act. We own considerably more to the north. It's just not showing up on that map. The light blue, if you can see it, is land sold from 1931 to 1983. That's lands in which we didn't reserve the minerals, but we reserved a royalty interest known as a non-participating royalty interest. And then in 1983, we got smart again. We just started reserving minerals outright. But most of this had been sold. That shows up as pink and purple. So there's scatterings of it, but not that much. But a lot of that was leased in the July 2016 sale. I met with Apache last week. They've come in. And they're going to have a pretty substantial amount of infrastructure to put in. That area was kind of left for dead, that southern Delaware Basin. It was thought that the clay content was too high. It was thought that it was all pure dry gas. And with high clay content, obviously, it makes it difficult to frack effectively. But what they that's true of the Barnett Shale and the Woodford Shale farther to the north, were Chesapeake drill wells, and they did encounter high clay content. However, Apaches encountered much lower clay content, like I say, about 15%. So they're going to actively go in and bring the infrastructure in. If you look at their website, it says they're going to spend about $500 million in that area in 2016, and of that, about 40% is going to be infrastructure because there's no large-scale pipelines down there. And what they propose to do is run a 30-inch line down the middle of the Alpine, what they call the Alpine High, and then run a line directly to Waha so they don't have to worry about having a midstream that they've got to deal with on that. They call it the Alpine High because it was structurally high when it was deposited, 400 million years ago, rather than being uplifted and complex. So it's fairly stable, and they're encountering some faulting. They're shooting seismic out there right now on it, so they'll be looking for faults and things like that. As I said, it's Barnett, Woodford, but there's also Bone Spring and Wolf Camp existing down there, and those would be bailout targets for them. Estimated the Alpine High in just the Barnett and the Woodford is estimated to hold 3 billion barrels of oil and 75 TCF of gas. Apache has paid the Permit School Fund over 90. They've been quietly leasing that area for the last 2 years, and they've paid us over $90 million in bonus, primarily for that Relinquishment Act land, the yellow on the map. And so that's about 200,000 acres from the PSF. And again, PSF owns about 40% of the minerals there, so it's a really good opportunity. I mean, it's going to be, if it works out, and there's no guarantees, it could generate billions of dollars for public education. So the bottom line is that when it comes to I was thinking, what can I talk about with shales? Really the main thing for us is it generates revenue for the Permanent School Fund. So basically, these shale plays like the Eagleford, and the Delaware Basin generate the majority of our revenue, and so shales do do help fund public education. The legislature can spend about, I think, up to 5% of the corpus of the fund, which I think is about at about $38 billion right now, per biennium on education. So the legislature decides. The vast majority of the permanent school fund money is held by the Texas Education Agency, where it's invested in safe stocks. They have a lot of rules about what they can and can't do. And about $3 billion of it is held by the GLO, and we use it to invest in companies that invest in oil and gas, upstream and midstream oil and gas. So, now, as far here, I'll kind of deviate a little bit. Tell me if I'm running out of time. But the commissioner has asked me to diversify our revenue sources. So we just had a build out of a wind lease down in Starr County, which is down near Rio Grande City, or down near the Mexico border. We've got four turbines up and running now. It's called the Duke Los Vientos project, and so we'll be getting revenue from a wind lease again. Finally, we also just did a new solar lease with a company called Eon, which is a large European renewables company, and that's in West Texas, out in Reeves County near the town of Pecos, and they plan to start building in the fourth quarter of 2017. So we'll also have revenue from solar. We've also contracted for a water resource study on state lands, and that will be completed by December of this year. And looking at what, obviously there's a lot of water is needed, particularly out in West Texas, and so we're looking to see what kind of water market we have and how best to do that and to market it in a way that makes sense and is fair to the neighbors. You know, I've asked them to look primarily at brackish water, because particularly in West Texas, when you start taking fresh water out of the ground, you start making ranchers mad. And so we're trying to look for water sources that no one else is utilizing and get companies to try to clean that up. And so we'll see. We'll know more in December. GLO is a diverse agency. A lot of people don't know that we manage and maintain the Alamo. We just put a new roof on the long barracks, and we redid the front facade. So that's actually – it's not owned by – everybody, all y'all own the Alamo, but we maintain and manage it. We also bought – those of you who've been there – there's all that funky stuff right across the street. There's like a Ripley's, believe it or not. And maybe you like that. I don't know. But we have since bought all those buildings. And so some of them have long-term leases like into the past 2020. So we'll have to wait them out. But once those are gone, we plan on redoing and trying to return the Alamo to basically its condition. Not its condition, but more similar to what it used to be, the compound itself. Because a lot of it has been built upon. We have the Veterans Land Board that provides land and home improvement loans to veterans in Texas. We also manage state veteran cemeteries and state veteran homes. There's a division there that just does that. Our Archives and Records Division has over 35 million documents in it and 45,000 maps dating back as far as 1561. We have our Surveying Division. Any survey changes... official survey changes in the state of Texas have to be approved by our surveying department. We have an army of surveyors and licensed state land surveyors. We also have an oil spill division, whereas the Railroad Commission is responsible for oil spills inland. If it's a coastal county or offshore, then the GLO does the response for the oil spill. We also have a community and development and revitalization division. They work with FEMA after large-scale disasters like Hurricanes Dolly and Ike, and then the Bastrop County wildfires. And so even though Ike was quite a few years ago, we're still spending money to rebuild houses in Galveston. And if you have any questions, I think I tried to hit right on 2:30, so I can start talking about allocation. Are you the next speaker? I think it's Todd Staples. He's with Texelco, and he and I have been talking a lot about allocation wells, which are wells that are drilled across multiple tracts and multiple leases that don't necessarily have the permission of the mineral owner. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Developments on GLO relating to oil and gas, do they require environmental impact assessments before they're developed?
Not all of them. The onshore ones don't. Offshore, they would have to go through the core permitting process. And obviously, you're going to need to have a Railroad Commission permit, whether it's a Railroad Commission has jurisdiction over state or in private land. So you need to get a Railroad Commission permit. If it's in state waters, the Gulf of Mexico or the Bay, we also own the bays like Corpus Christi Bay, Galveston Bay. They're going to have to get a core permit, and that's the point at which the environmental assessment takes place. The permit is sent out to Texas Parks and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, National Marine Fisheries Service, Texas Historical Commission, and the Corps itself, and all five of those resource agencies comment and will place restrictions on those. So for offshore, yes. For onshore, we require in our leases that they follow the guidelines of the Railroad Commission. But I do have petroleum engineers who work for me. They mainly are looking at auditing and looking how production's metered and commingled. So we do, and I have five inspectors covering 13 million acres, but they're actively out there inspecting wells. So if they see a spill or something like that, they will immediately report it to the Railroad Commission. Yes, ma'am.
The coastal easements portion of the permanent school land fund, over time, is that pretty much stayed the same or is it increasing since you're looking for more revenue?
Coastal easements or leases?
The coastal leases.
It's gone. It's fairly dead in state waters. Ever since the Deepwater Horizon, the BP spill, the cost of operation, the cost of insurance, the cost of everything has gone way up. There's not an unconventional play that I know of. There is a deep shale out there, but it's very deep. And so most of the money is flowing to the unconventional. So you're seeing a lot of money. And even now, we're as busy now as we were at $100 oil just because we got so much acreage in the Delaware Basin. And a lot of these companies have been consolidating back into the Permian Basin because you can still make money at $40 oil there. So some of them are moving money out of the Bakken, moving rigs out of the Eagle Ford and into the Delaware. And they're leasing lands, some of them we haven't leased in decades, that are farther west than the established oil and gas infrastructure. But the offshore is fairly dead right now. We do a few, but most of them are near shore. And on those, when we do lease offshore tracts, they do go through a process. We give notice to all the five resource agencies I mentioned earlier. Typically, the resource agencies won't respond to me, except Texas Historical Commission, because they know that an oil and gas lease itself doesn't impact the property. It's the drilling of a well or the laying of a pipeline or the shooting of seismic that has an impact. So they'll wait until the core process. So they're not looking at every single tract we try to lease. They're looking at only the ones